folks, and welcome to the Snowy's Camping Show with Ben and Lauren. You are here today in our studio as usual, and we're going to talk a little bit about generators today, which neither of us know much about.
Not much.
But before...
So let's talk about a topic we know nothing about. We're off to a good start.
Before we get into it, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcast, be that through YouTube or your favorite podcast app. So new gear that we've got in at Snowy's in the last week or so.
Yep.
Pretty exciting before we jump into the meat of it.
So Blacksmith, our friends at Blacksmith have had they've had a wheel bag for a while now, and you can only get it through the Blacksmith website. But now.
Well, have we had their khaki one before at all? Have we had their wheel bag at all?
No, we haven't had it at all. Nice. But they've also brought out a khaki version of this. Yeah. Wheel bag, a heavy duty wheel bag made for big, like 33, probably even bigger inch tires. Just made tough.
It's a good looking wheel bag as well.
Yep.
I, on the van, have my spare wheel stowed under the vehicle, mm-hmm. and we are getting a spare wheel.
An under vehicle mount. Wheel bag?
Yeah, no, we're getting a rear vehicle mount made custom for the van because you can't just get them aftermarket in Australia for some obscene reason. Just so I can have one of these wheel bags because I love them so much.
So you're going to stick like 50 kilos of tire and another, 40 kilos of bracket so that you can hang a 4 kilo.
Yeah, well, it's already got 50 kilos of tire and a reasonable bracket underneath the vehicle. We're just going to move it to the top.
Not an extra wheel. It's a
No, okay. Not an extra wheel. We're moving that and then we're going to put water tanks under it. Well, I digress. Okay. But anyway, the point of my story is I'm modifying my vehicle so I can have a Blacksmith wheel bag because A, they look good, and B, I want a wheel bag so bad.
Nice.
Didn't you actually consult on the development of this wheel bag, by the way? That's tidbit for our listeners.
We're closely related to Blacksmith. We were, I do remember standing in the car park here at the back of my car with bits of fabric and
you're like, what about this? What about that? And I like this.
Fit it on. And yeah, that was before I went on my big trip.
Yeah.
So yes, but obviously also largely influenced by just feedback from Blacksmith, they don't just make something and go, that's what we think you should have.
Yeah, of course.
It's largely based on looking at what people have said about other bags, pros, cons, what works, what doesn't, things
Yeah,
they want,
good product development there.
Something new. So, yeah. New water bottles, which is pretty cool. So there's a brand called SIG that we used to have at Snowy's. And I think
– there's a little Swiss flag, I think, is one of their logos that people know.
Great brand, but I think we've always struggled with getting it as part of our range. It's a headache with our purchasing department. But they've recently found a brand called, now I think I said it right, Laken or Larken.
Laken.
L-A-K-E-N, which is a Spanish brand, pretty much like Swig. Looks Swig.
Swig.
Have a Swig from your
Stainless steel bottles.
Alloy. There's a dual wall one, and I'm pretty sure they're actually. I know a long time ago there's an alloy. Anyway, I know we're getting some. They probably do stainless steel and alloy versions, but I'm pretty sure
there's quite a significant range of
there
them.
There is, yeah. But anyway, we're getting into that brand, and there's some nice looking stuff. And I used to deal with them quite a long time ago with another place I worked at. But some of the dual wall one, insulated ones are packaged really nicely and look really, really nice. So.
Sweet. And Zempire Aerodome Pro. We've had Aerodome Pro tents for a while. I'm going to go back there. We haven't had them for a while. They haven't been in our range for a while.
They've been part of the range. We haven't had to get them.
Yeah. And so a lot of people have been asking for them over the last couple of months. When are you going to get the Aerodome Pro? Blah, 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 blah. They're coming back.
If you haven't looked at the Aerodome range from Zempire, jump on the Snowy's website and just search for Aerodome and have a look because they're really nice looking tents. They're a little bit kind of futuristic looking, and there's lots of storage options. Really livable with air pole frames.
Great for coastal camping.
Coastal camping and or family camping tent, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway, into the topic, generators. Mm. So we've just put a note here to start with to say, disclaimer, we don't actually know much about generators because – do you have or do you use one at all?
Not me personally, but growing up, whenever we would go away camping, especially on our big family camping trips for like a week or two out in the middle of the Donga, Nana and Pa would chuck their nice, massive, big 240-volt chest freezer on the back of the ute and, mm-hmm. like, drive out to the outback, and that is what we would have. And so, obviously, therefore, we had a generator as well.
Right.
And, like, you know, this predates solar power and all that sort of jazz, and, you know, pretty much all of the appliances that we had were 240-volt appliances. And, I mean, basic, because, come on, like, we're not counting air conditioners out there or anything, yeah. but just, you know, all of our lighting and, you know, freezer.
Yep. All the basics, yeah.
All the basics.
Yep.
So, yes, like experience with them growing up with camping, but I don't use one and haven't sort of really had much to do with the newer ones.
Yeah, okay. I don't use them. I haven't got one. I don't think I've ever gotten past the point of thinking it's quite bulky and I've got to carry fuel for it, and there's solar alternatives that's probably better. I think I've brought up my opinions on this before, and some people have jumped in and said if you're long-term camping and you get rainy days,
yeah,
in a lot of days in a row, solar fails, right? You can't get enough power, so you need a generator. So I guess I had to sort of back off a little bit after, I can't remember what episode I mentioned it in.
Maybe camping gear you don't need, or whatever. So. There was a few things we poo-pooed in there, and people were like, hang on a minute.
Yeah,
which is completely fair.
We're happy to tell your opinion, but tell us to shut up if you think we're wrong. And I can see the value in if you are long staying. Some people will go and stay for months, right? And you probably do need a generator as well as some solar in that respect. So, So I can see some benefits to it. It doesn't make me want to get one, but I'm not staying for particularly long times in one spot. So.
So,
lots of people ask us to talk about it.
Lots of people have asked us to talk about it. And I guess at this time of year, it's potentially topical because of exactly what you've just said. Solar is not necessarily reliable when you're camping throughout winter or depending on the environment that you're in. And, you know, the second best thing if you're very, very remote is a generator.
Yep.
So this episode is largely just things that we've found out through research. And I've learned a huge amount about generators now.
Well, I hope we can sort of promote a bit more conversation around them online to firstly learn about them, but also learn about how to maybe use them considerately.
Yeah, for campus. Sure.
So we've got a couple of models, haven't we, from Engle.
We do. Yep.
We don't sell heaps of generators, but a 2500 and a 3500 watt generator that Kev, our other video person, did a couple of videos on how they work.
Caravanning Kev, if you listen to the podcast.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And now you've got a, Eric, did you get your definition here from one of your?
From my partner.
You said it.
I was just like, simplify
what it is, really.
I was like, how does a generator even work? You know, because then I went on to say, stupidly, my car engine doesn't generate power.
Yeah, right. You just said that on the podcast.
I said that on the podcast.
Everyone
and
heard you.
Obviously, if I think about it, I know that that was the stupidest thing to say. But then that just prompted a whole conversation about the generators, which is fine. But according to my partner, who's an electrician, the TAFE definition, which is in South Australia, I don't know if TAFE's a national thing, but in South Australia, if you want to have a trade, like if you're a plumber, electrician or whatever, you get your certification through TAFE, basically.
It's like a university alternative.
Yeah, yeah. So a conductor / copper coil that moves inside a magnetic field generates electricity. It's that simple.
So an alternator on a car is a similar thing, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
So you're putting, if you line up generator and car, you put petrol in, you get electricity out of the generator. Car's the same, you put petrol in, but it drives the engine. But you've also got the alternator that's powered by the engine. Now I'm getting confused because there's coils and all sorts in there. I'm not an auto electrician. I just work on the power that comes out of it.
But the alternator generates power from your motor, which powers your lights and your battery, charges battery and all that sort of jazz. Anyway, let's not veer too close to the world of mechanics.
Talking about, and we'll just go, no, that doesn't work. No, it doesn't sound right either. It'd be useless for our listeners.
But, yeah, like you've mentioned before, if you're going on a longer trip where you have consistent power requirements but not consistent sun if you're on solar, or you're too far away to be able to pop into town or have occasional stops where 240-volt power is available. And I don't know, do you know anybody who does super long-term isolated trips? Because I personally don't, and I'm glad because I would be insanely jealous. But do you know anybody who does?
No. Well, I've known people who have who've just gone walkabout, like just like to disappear in the bush, and I could probably do it myself, to be honest with you. But I want to stay with my kids, and my
totally
family, and
love
stuff.
Doing
but,
that. Yeah.
If I didn't have any attachments here that I loved, I'd quite happily just disappear into the bush by myself. I reckon there's a few people on either in our YouTube community or in our Facebook group who do or have in the past lived quite remotely for periods of time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll jump in on this conversation. So certainly keen to hear about that. But no, I don't know of anyone specifically right now.
Yeah.
That was a long answer.
So obviously you can use your generator to as like a backup charging for your 12-volt battery system, and they'll obviously produce 240-volt power. So if you want to have AC or 240-volt appliances, you can run them off that. And then some generators will also have a 12-volt output. So there are different kinds, obviously, for heaps of different purposes. So a generator that you might have at home that's used as like a backup if you live somewhere in like bushfire prone areas or whatever is not necessarily going to be the same as a generator you would choose if you do camping.
I think most people would use it for the 240-volt option to then charge smaller devices from that, I would think.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Part of me feels like if you're someone who is – loving your 240-volt devices, you're probably not going too far.
If you've got to take your coffee machine.
Yeah.
I might
take your coffee machine or your TV or your microwave or your air conditioner.
I'm just going to have
you're not going out into the sticks with your giant generator, are you?
No.
You go into a caravan park or a campground where you have adequate 240-volt power supply. Or you would have spent many thousands of dollars on a gigantic 12-volt battery system and an inverter that sheds heaps of
yeah. So that's just another
power
way to get the same thing.
Get you the luxuries.
Solar doesn't have the noise of the generator is the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm just having a look. When we talk 240-volt, there's 240-volt pure sine wave and also the 240-volt what's the other option? It's a
I know what you mean, and the word escapes me.
So one of them gives like a nice even 240-volt sine wave, which is what you get out of your 240-volt socket at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other type that kind of peaks at 240 and zero. It goes on and off.
I can't remember what it's called, but I'm going to kick myself because we'll see it and we'll be like, of course.
Yeah.
It's like trying to remember your kid's name.
Yeah, but it's I remember them now. But 240, a lot of computers and devices and a lot of appliances actually need pure sine wave to operate well. So there's probably plenty of generators out there who I don't know for sure. I know the Engel ones. I'm just looking now. The Engel ones that we sell are a pure sine wave generator, which means they'll run up to that. The wattage that they're rated for, they'll run devices that –
yeah, correct.
Any 240-volt device.
So it's like if you're getting a recreational generator, which is the one that you would use, they generally will have be an inverter generator as well and they will have pure sine wave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are looking at one for camping, it's that recreational one. And I mean, I personally haven't found any recreational generators that weren't also an inverter generator.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they're not there. It was just that when I was having a look around, trying to learn more about them, I didn't come across any. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, 5 years ago there might have been more, but maybe now, you know, if it's a recreational generator, it's just gone, it's an inverter generator.
It must have some sort of inverter in there to step that power up to the 240 or control it between the
inverter generators will have AC and DC, but a standard generator just does 240.
Oh, is that right? And
correct.
A sine wave 240?
Yeah. So the inverter generators will have that pure sine wave in them.
Right.
And so for the purposes of this podcast, I didn't look into any other kind of generators that produce just 240. I looked into the recreational inverter generators because they're the ones that have the application for our listeners for the most part.
So it gets pretty techy, I suppose. We don't get it too far down that path. But, yeah, to have a if you're buying one, just consider pure sine wave, direct current and or how the inverter operates.
Yeah. And from everything that I've also looked into, it's that if you're getting that particular type of generator, they generally look very similar to the Engel ones that we have, where they've got a nice sort of tight little narrow profile. You know, they're a little bit long and tall, but they're narrow, so they could slip in and pack easily and not take up too much room, and they're not monstrously heavy. Like when we went camping when I was a kid, the generator we used had like giant big roll bars, and it was literally like an engine like that would sit on springs and like, basically something like that. So they're not like that anymore. But they do range in like a variety of sizes. You know, you can get them. Output. You can get them for less than 2,000 watt or above 3,000 watt. I think, you know, you're probably looking at somewhere up to 7,000 watt max for like a recreational generator, but around about that 2,000 to 3,000 watt is the most common size if you're looking for something for camping.
7,000 is a fair bit of
7,000 is camping. Massive. Maybe if you've got like a giant big motorhome or like super swish caravan or something and you love to live it up in luxury.
Yep.
But I guess that also lines up with a lot of inverters, like as in the 240 volt inverter that you want to plug into your solar system.
To power
240 volt appliances is 2,000 to 3,000. So it makes sense.
The small ones are like 600 watt, which really just for charging laptops and the like. But correct, then if you want to be able to run a kettle or your coffee machine, then 2,000 to 3,000 watt. So
I think that sort of obviously lines up with the generator in terms of the sizing. But again, like you would say with any situation where you're talking about off-grid power, you need to be aware of what it is that you want to power and what you want to run and what, if any, existing systems that you have work all that out before you start looking at.
Yeah. And by that we mean add up the wattage. So if you want to run a toaster and a bar heater, the bar heater is probably 3,000 watt already. So you can't run both of them at the same time. You've got to turn your bar heater off when you use your toaster. But if you've got two 1,000 watt heaters, then you can run them at the same time because it's within.
Or if you've got like a refrigerative air conditioner. God, got that out eventually. If you've got something like that in your van, like your caravan, and you want to run that all night, like think about that as well.
A lot of power. Diesel or petrol? I assume that they must be both.
You can, options. It looks like there's a couple of different options out there, which is diesel or petrol. I would assume that sort of moving on to what I perceive the limitations are with having a generator, I would assume that if you have a diesel vehicle, you would be getting a diesel generator.
I'd be interested to know if one's noisier than the other because I know like Honda make generators and they've always
and
made
like
good
Yamaha
generators
and
they're really quiet. But I imagine they must be petrol, not diesel, because surely diesel would be noisier.
I don't know. I mean, I've just recently got a cool little diesel hatchback and it's the boss, but it is so chuggy. Like it makes the best sound when you're driving around.
Sort of rattly kind of diesel sound.
Yeah, it's like very diesely. So I'm assuming based on my very expansive knowledge about my little diesel car versus my old petrol car, that a diesel one wouldn't be noisier. But from that perspective though, I'm saying like because if you have a generator, you have to carry fuel for that. You may as well carry the same type of fuel for your car and your generator than having to have two different types of fuel. Like to me, that makes sense. But again, if there's anybody out there who runs generators, like give us some advice.
It'd be good to know like how much fuel do you need to take?
Yeah.
For how long? Because if it's only a couple of litres, then you're not going to strap an entire 40-litre jerry can on the outside of your car for that. Then you're stuck with like a 5-litre fuel can that you've got to store somewhere, right? And then it goes down that path of do I store this in the cabin or can I store it outside?
And I guess obviously it would also change if you're using your generator to top up an existing battery system or if you're just using your generator as your main power source.
Yep.
There would obviously be a difference in the fuel consumption. But I think I read like generators can run for anywhere from 8 to 16 hours depending on their size and stuff like that. So
just to idle away really efficiently for long periods.
I would say just go with the fuel that works for your vehicle so you don't have to carry multiple different kinds of fuel. But we do also have, just a quick little aside, episode 20 we did, which was storing fuel safely and carrying fuel safely on your trip. Just if you don't already carry fuel and you want to know more about that because you're thinking about a generator, episode 20 might be good for you to listen to as well.
If it's only a few litres, that's an easy one to strap to a roof rack as well.
Yeah,
a 40
for sure.
litre jerry can's a bit different. I think people should be aware too that a lot of national parks, almost all national parks, don't actually allow generators. A lot of campsites, I think caravan parks even, don't allow you to have a generator. So if you want a generator, you think that sounds fantastic and suits your style of camping,
yeah.
just be aware of where you want to go and if you can actually use it when you get there. Because if you can't, then
yeah,
you're going to need an alternative.
Correct. Like you've relied, you know, that's your main power source and you haven't sort of done that due diligence in terms of finding out whether or not you can use a generator.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you can't, you're a bit stuffed.
Yeah. And you've made a really good note here too that even if you, actually we're going on to Essica. Are we
yeah. ready
for, I'll jump onto this yet.
I was just going
to. Oh, sorry, we've got one more point before we go on to that.
No, that's okay. I was just going to mention that I did say earlier that you can use your generator to top up your 12-volt battery system. But something that I found that was really interesting is that even if your generator has a 12-volt output, you still shouldn't use that to charge your 12-volt battery system because the outputs generally don't have the same level on a generator. They don't have the same level of charge regulation or that no battery management system and all that sort of jazz and they might not have the same current output as well. So using your 12-volt output on your generator to charge your 12-volt system is super unreliable and can cause harm. So if you are getting a generator purely for the purpose of or primarily for the purpose of topping up your battery system, then you will also need to get a smart charger, like an AC yep. to DC smart charger.
Or DC-DC if you've got DC output on your generator. I know what you mean.
No, apparently AC. Like if you want to top up your 12-volt battery system, you should be using the 240-volt output on your generator.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's. I mean, I'm happy to be wrong, but I did research that a bit and I couldn't really find any information that suggested that DC to DC charging from your generator was the way to go. It was definitely 240-volt outlet using a smart charger.
Yeah, okay. You get into a lot of different devices there, aren't you, to convert from 12 yeah. volt to 240 back to 12. It's up and down. There's probably read into it and make sure you're
read
doing
into it. I mean,
right.
You might already be someone who has a 240-volt smart charger because you like to plug in your system at home sometimes because you don't want to have it consistently plugged into solar to keep it topped up if you're not going to be going away for a couple of months. So people might already have a smart charger on hand, which is mm-hmm. totally fine. You just use the same thing as if you're going to plug it in at home and charge up your 12-volt system. You just use the same thing, but for your generator.
So you mean like a C-Tech charger that you would plug into the wall and charge your car battery?
Yeah,
with
like Victron do them or yep. Red Arc do them. Yep. Yeah.
So I don't. It'd be interesting to know if there is a like if people have it. Put your DC-DC charger in your car and you can plug your yeah. solar into that and it also charges from the car.
Yeah.
Whether there's an option if people have already got a DC-DC charger, if any of those also have the capability to be able to run your generator through that. I don't know. That's something that's really just come up in my mind now.
Yeah.
I imagine you
it was
could
just
do it.
The main thing was that the output would not necessarily – the output on the generator isn't regulated. It depends on the actual cycle of the generator.
Right.
And so if the output isn't regulated and it's not necessarily consistent current and that current isn't high enough, the information seems to suggest that that port wasn't reliable to produce the power that the battery would need to be charged.
Right. I'd be interested to know.
But it would be good to know.
I think it's a good idea for people staying long term if you can transport a generator to use that
yeah.
to give your 12-volt system a good charge, particularly if you've just got like a PWM controller from a solar panel
yeah.
and you're out for a long time and you want to give your batteries a really good charge. You can use the 240-volt through a smart charger to give them, you know, give them 100% charge.
Yeah.
It'd be really interesting to know if people do that, how they do it, how they get the most out of it. Because
for
I think that's a good way to do it. You could run it during the day when the noise isn't an issue to charge your 12-volt system and then you've got solar during the night.
Yeah.
Or got 12-volt power during the night.
Yeah.
I was going to go into this first, you typed this out and this first point that you've written here I think is really important, that just because you're camping somewhere that generators can be used doesn't necessarily mean you should. Doesn't mean you can't either, but as with all camping etiquette, maybe just be considerate to the people around you. Don't go and set your generator up right next to their tent and say, well, I'm allowed to, so I will.
Yeah.
Let's just have a conversation with them and say, I've got a generator. How can we be mutually happy in this campsite?
For sure. Like, I think to myself, the idea of a generator just makes me like, ugh. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But if somebody came up and said, hey, guys, I have a generator. This is what I use it for or why I use it. And this is when I usually run it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, is this going to not for them to necessarily ask me permission, but just to have the courtesy that they're acknowledging that their generator might impact, you know, my camping experience. Yep. And therefore they're just willing to be like, hey, because if I know, oh, you know, you're going to run this or you have this or this is why you're using it and I understand why and they can be like, I usually turn it off about this time or run it for like X amount of hours or whatever, at least then you can be like, oh, there's an end to this hell. It's not yeah. like, you know, you're sitting there.
Everyone knows what to expect. No one's
Everyone
there thinking,
knows what
are
to
annoyed?
Expect. Everyone's people. Aware of each other.
Yep.
You know, there's good conscientious communications all round.
I still think even if you negotiate different times, if the site says generators off after, what do they usually say,
like 9, 10 or something,
something
yeah,
like that, then just adhere to that. That's the site rules. Just do it.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. So, and also I would suggest that camp as far away as you can from other people.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you communicate, like where possible, even if you communicate and, you know, everyone has that expectation, it is still going to be annoying to some people. So not just communicate but also minimize the impact that you have on others. And I reckon most people using them who are out in the sticks don't see anyone around for bloody days, you know. So in that situation it doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe when you arrive to camp, we always think about where the tent's going to go, where the car's going to go. If you've got a generator, just think about where's the generator going to go. If there's people on one side but not the other, then prioritise putting the generator on the side that the other people aren't.
Yeah, and if, you know, your generator's in behind your tents and your vehicles and stuff, even if it's a packed campground, that's going to act as a bit of a sound deadening maybe, buffer that sound out. So,
yep.
The only other thing that I want to mention on this is that it seems pretty clear after some research that if you're someone who is going to be relying heavily on a generator, then you get what you pay for in no uncertain terms.
In terms of efficiency, noise, output, all of those things.
Lifespan.
Yep.
Like perform, like everything.
Yep.
And I did see a comment that popped up similar places across everywhere. It's like, you know, if you see a generator Audi that costs $200 and ticks all your boxes, don't expect that you're still going to be necessarily using it in a year's time.
Yep.
And that realistically you'd probably be wanting to look at, like you're looking at $500-$600.
Yeah. Or more than I would
minimum,
have thought.
Minimum. Yeah.
I think the angle ones that we sell are double that at least. So.
Yeah, and that the quality, the more money you spend generally equates to the quieter and more efficient it will run and stuff as well.
Were you paying for all that research into muffling or
dampening the
noise and
technical advancements design of that brand and that product design?
Probably lighter as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look, I'm going to say something potentially controversial, at least for me, because I very
I think we've done well to get this far through a generator because neither of us like generators. We've done well to get this far without.
We have done well to get this far, but what I'm going to say is that I don't often change my mind, but after doing the research that I've done, I can, like, I'm not a generator poo-pooer as much as I was beforehand.
Yeah. You'll avoid it if you can.
Like, I'm not going to buy one. But potentially one day I might buy one if my circumstances change and I'm intending to travel permanently and be does that sort of make sense?
Self-sufficient. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I guess I'm the same. I'm not going to roll my eyes if I see a generator roll into camp and people are being considerate about how they place it and how they run it and when they run it. Following our Camp Gear You Don't Need episode 2, I had a moment of like, well, maybe I just assumed everyone was on the same page as me.
Yeah.
Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah.
Happy to be wrong.
And
maybe
I mean,
just rethink my position on that.
To be honest, I had maintained that poo-poo generators thing up until I actively started researching for this episode.
Right.
Yeah, because, and I guess that maybe says a lot, doesn't it? It's like it's a lot easier to just poo-poo something that you don't really know anything about.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, generators.
Anyway, generators. So, if you use one, if you use one, tell us about it. Tell us how and when and why and
my big thing is how, you know, consideration to others. How do you make sure that what you're doing is considerate to others?
How do you use it?
When do you run it?
Apply that in your camping situation.
Yeah.
Now our story of the week. We didn't do one last episode because we didn't really have.
Nothing was happening in the world.
Nothing was really happening in the world that we thought, well, obviously something's happening in the world, but nothing was happening in the world that made us be like, wow. And the only reason why this is a story of the week is because I love camping at the Riverland. Absolutely love it. It's like a three and a half hour drive from Adelaide.
For interstate people, yeah, it's like a fruit growing region around the Murray River.
Yeah, like Redmark area. It's sort of really close to the border of New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. Yep. So if you're in Victoria, or in the southern part of New South Wales, it's just a very sort of couple of hours, nice place to go. The river's beautiful, lots of camp spots, lots of conservation parks, national park areas, all of that sort of jazz.
Fishing, water sports, kayaking,
all sorts, you name it.
Heaps of shops, towns. It's awesome. Quite a dense place. You can spend quite a bit of time there.
Definitely.
I'm actually going there this weekend.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, so. It is pretty dense. Like, I mean, when you drive up from Adelaide, it's what? Like you basically are doing 2.5 hours of
little towns,
voidness.
Towns that are like a church, a pub and two houses.
Yeah, and the pub's closed down, you know. Yep. It's like one and then and like nothing, not even really vegetation much.
Yep.
And then bam, you're at the Riverland and it's like hustle and bustle and it's so great.
Yeah.
And you've got that beautiful river. But anyway, last year, unless you lived under a rock, you would know that area region got flooded really insanely. And it wasn't like, you know, the Queensland, New South Wales floods from that perspective. It was more just we had so much rain and I think everything was coming down through the catchments from those other flood events in other states. And the water level just kept rising and rising and rising and rising and rising and there was just so much coming in. And
it wasn't a flood like this rush of water. It was just the river just slowly started to get higher.
Just all of a sudden it just got higher and higher and higher and higher.
A friend who's got haven't spoken for a long time, but he's got a shack
like Swan Reach,
up north that way. And it's on stilts. A lot of the houses there are on stilts. So you've got the bottom layer and then the top layer. And I saw a photo of him on his boat just going around the roof of his house and he goes, I'm just cleaning my gutters from my boat.
That's so good.
So the whole house
is flooded.
Was underwater just the peak sitting up. And the water just slowly crept up and just engulfed his house and then
it slowly goes down again.
Good thing is though that that's receded.
It has receded. And so that's the purpose of the story of the week is that in the last week or two and in the next week or two, pretty much most of those campsites and places that people love to go are back.
And they want people to go back.
And because they want people to go back because of the region.
Been affected and they just want to pump dollars back into the area. So,
but we're excited because it's one of our go-to regions for like a quick weekend getaway and stuff. And I can post some photos on the group at some stage of when we went back there and did a little kayak through our normal campsites. We've got a photo, a tree that, you know, non-flood and whatever.
Yep.
But, yeah, anyway, that's the story of the week. The Riverland is back for business.
You're thinking now's the time.
Camp.
Yeah.
Wildlife, birds, you name it, after the flood, it's just booming.
Even if you don't camp, just go stay somewhere, caravan park,
caravan parks. There's heaps obviously of stuff a there. Lot of those caravan parks, which are riverside, totally underwater.
Yep.
They're back to business.
Yep.
Yeah.
Go back and support them. Cool.
Sweet.
That's it for another episode. Generators, something we knew nothing about.
And now know
a little bit more about. But still not much more about, but we hope everyone in the group can fill in all the gaps.
Enlighten us. Thanks so much, folks. Have a great week, and we will see you next Monday.
See you later.